So welcome all to the April meeting of the Ottawa Peace User Group. As I just mentioned, everybody is muted and does not have the ability to unmute themselves. You can comment or ask questions in the chat window or wait until after the presentation. And at that point, I'll allow people to unmute themselves and you can ask audibly as well as continue using the chat. The audio is being recorded. The deck, the auto recording, and the contents of the chat window will be going up onto our website over the next couple of days. And so tonight's presentation is going to be the Office Smackdown, and we're going to do a little bit of a comparison between Microsoft Office and LibreOffice, and Alan is going to kick it off going through the deck. So Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So as Chris said, we're doing a comparison of the two programs, and we've picked Office Suites. So we're looking at Microsoft Office, which most people will be familiar with, and also LibreOffice, which is an open source product, kind of a competitor, I guess. And the genesis of this presentation is almost 10 years ago, when I took my first look at LibreOffice and Microsoft Office. And although in theory, Microsoft was supporting the open document format, and Microsoft Office had all kinds of problems with LibreOffice native files. So for example, the first example here, I have a open document text format file, which Microsoft says it can't be open because there are problems with the content. And in fact, it said the file's corrupt and it can't be open. So there, go away. And then a spreadsheet file, my spreadsheet for the board account, for the club account, Excel finds unreadable content in opcug.ods. It did actually read the file in, and so I had a nice spreadsheet with all my numbers. And then I changed one of the amounts in one of the columns, and I saw that the total didn't change. So what Microsoft in its wisdom had done was open the file, create all the numbers in the various cells, but ignore all of the underlying formulae. So I had a spreadsheet that was incapable of calculating anything, which is very useful. I mean, just incredibly useful. But that was 10 years ago. So this is now. However, the functionality of these two suites is definitely a moving target. And things are changing in terms of features and bug fixes and all the rest of it. So Chris and I decided that we would go with Office 2019, and of course Office has just released 2021, so this is not the most current version, and LibreOffice at 7.3.1.3 specifically. So those are the two products that we're actually considering tonight. Both are fairly current. So the question is, what are the issues? So most people, I'm sure, are probably either using or at least familiar with Microsoft Office. So the question is, you know, can you replace Office with LibreOffice? And why would you want to do so? And can you save any money? And which is the best suite? Which has more features and which has the best support? And if you do make a switch, what kind of problems might you run into? So the bottom line is, if you're a Microsoft Office user, you want to switch to LibreOffice. And if you're a LibreOffice user, is there any point in switching to Microsoft Office? And of course, to some extent, it depends on what computer you're using. And so if you look at the various platforms that are available for these products, Microsoft has Windows, Mac, Android, and iOS versions for Office, except no Publisher and Access only have Windows versions available. And it does have a web-based system, Office 365 or Microsoft 365, whatever it's called now. But you notice my graphic here, there's no Linux version. There's no native Linux version of Office. So, and this is why I came across LibreOffice in the first place. When I started using Linux, there was no Windows product. So by default, I was using OpenOffice back then, and then switched eventually to LibreOffice. LibreOffice has cross-platform versions, essentially. There are Windows, Linux, and macOS versions. And there's also a product called CollaborateOffice, and that's available for Android, iOS, and Chromebooks. And it also provides a portable version, which you can run off a flash drive or something, and so you don't actually need to mess up your beautifully crafted configuration on your computer. But there's no web-based apps for LibreOffice. Probably the biggest thing that everybody knows about are the differences in licensing. And you all know probably that LibreOffice is open source. It's free software, and free in the open source world means copyleft rather than copyright. So it's free to use, to modify, to share however you want. And the code is available if you're a programmer and were capable of changing it yourselves. Now, however, there's an obligation that if you do change the code and you publish it, then you have to publish your changes to the source code. And that keeps the source code essentially free. And because everything's free, you also get the second kind of free, the free beer, where usually these products will be no cost. Now, contrasting that will be Microsoft's model, which is copyrighted software. There are licensing fees, that you have to buy the product. And if you're a multi-seat operation like a company, then you have to buy a license for every person that uses it. Now, there are various restrictions, like the number of users, the number of machines that you can use on it. And, of course, you don't have access to the source code. However, both of these licensing models produce system updates. They have help files either built in and or online. And there are also usually user forums and all kinds of how-tos and video tutorials. So there's lots of helpful information out there. The other thing that both platforms give you is update processes. Typically, LibreOffice will notify you when there are updates available. You see this little pop-up in the top right-hand corner of the screen. And then you basically manually download and install the new software. Office, normally patches to Office come as a regular Windows update on Patch Tuesday. However, there are sometimes out-of-band updates, and you'll see sometimes a Office pop-up window will tell you that updates are available right now. You can keep on working, but it will download and install these things in the background. And you're also allowed any time you want using Windows Update to do a manual check and update whatever is available. And I did say we settled on Office 2019, and while that's receiving security updates, it doesn't receive any new features anymore because they've released the new version. And then Office 365 is the subscription-based model. It updates periodically. You don't have to do anything. Chris says it just happens. And you get a steady stream of updates and new features. And this is Chris again, whether you want them or not. And so if you like automatic updates, then that Office is one of the things that will give you. Okay, a bit of background on the two programs. And especially for LibreOffice, since a lot of people may not know much about that product. It does come with half a dozen different modules. There's a word processor called Writer, spreadsheet called Calc, a presentation manager called Impress. It also has database, drawing and a mathematical formula editor. We're going to concentrate on just the first three, because those are the probably ones that people use mostly in office suites. And in terms of history, it all comes back to about 1985, when this German student, 16-year-old student, developed a program called StarWriter. And then he went on to form a company called Star Division, and he developed what was then called Star Office. And you notice the modules have very familiar names, Star Writer, Star Calc, et cetera, et cetera. So that was Star Office. And then in 1999, Sun Microsystems came along and they bought the company. And they bought it for $73.5 million. So a German student did reasonably well, I imagine, off that. And then they renamed Star Office to OpenOffice.org, which is where I came into the picture. I started using it as OpenOffice under Linux. But Sun Microsystems, they did release the program code as open source, and a whole raft of developers got together and basically built OpenOffice. Until 10 years later, when Oracle Corporation came along and bought Sun Microsystems. And clearly, when they did that, they also obtained OpenOffice. And there was a lot of concern in the open source community. Oracle Corporation didn't have a good rep in terms of open source and free software and all that kind of good stuff. So basically what happened was, remember, it's open source, so you can take the code and you can rewrite it, and that becomes then they call a fork, because now you've got two parallel or diverging, I guess, development protocols. OpenOffice keeps going, and then LibreOffice goes along its own development path. And to run the operation, the Document Foundation was established, and basically most of the developers for OpenOffice switched over to LibreOffice. And then a year later, Oracle basically gave up and handed OpenOffice over to the Apache Foundation. And I've lost track now of what's going on with OpenOffice, but I believe now if you download it, it's called Apache OpenOffice. And then in the meantime, LibreOffice is going by leaps and bounds, and we're now at version 7.3 and still going. In terms of file formats, Open Document has its own set of file formats. So there's a text format, ODT. There's Open Document Spreadsheet, which is ODS. And there's also a Presentation Manager file called ODP. And those are used by these three modules, Writer, Calc, and Impress. But note that LibreOffice also supports Microsoft Office files. So you got Doc or DocX, XLS or XLSX, etc. And LibreOffice can easily handle Office files. What about Microsoft Office? Well, it's a bit more complicated. Clearly, they have Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And they also have a database manager, which is called Microsoft Access. A lot of people will be familiar with various forms of their electronic mail client, Outlook, and they also have things like OneNote and Publisher and so on and so forth. And it really depends which version of Office you buy in terms of what modules are included. Again, for our purposes, we're just going to limit the discussion to Word, Excel, and PowerPoint to compare with Writer, Calc, and Impress. Microsoft Office history is a bit simpler, I guess. It started off life as just combining Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, which were originally standalone products. So 1990, Microsoft released Office 1.0. And then who remembers this guy? Office 97 came with an Office Assistant. And this is Clippy, and Clippy would pop up and offer to do all kinds of wonderful things for you based on the context in which you were working at the time. And then the next big feature came along was in Office 2007, when the much loved or much hated ribbon came along. And I actually like the ribbon. It's the same kind of system in LibreOffice. And I use the icons in the ribbon all the time. But I also really like having the menu available. So I make sure I turn that on where available. And then the other thing about Microsoft Office is Office 365, which I was amazed to find out first came out in 2010. So it's been around for more than 10 years. And this is so-called software as a service. It's subscription-based. So you don't buy Office 365 and have it forever. You pay Microsoft an annual fee for the privilege of running their software. The good news is that you get constant updates, new features, security patches, etc. So as long as you pay the fee, then you get the service. And more recently, Office 365 has now been renamed to Microsoft 365. Okay, so now we're going to let Chris go ahead and talk about some issues that apply to both products.
Okay. Sorry, I should shift F5 rather than an F5. Before I go on from that, I will mention, though, even though they charge for it as a subscription service, especially if you have multiple computers in your house, it can actually be quite cost-effective to go Office 365 rather than buying the perpetual suite. So just a comment on that. So now getting into cross-suite issues. So the bulk of our presentation tonight is going to be comparing the individual modules, but there are some things that sort of cut across the board. One is an import and export. And both Microsoft Office can import and export the LibreOffice formats. LibreOffice can import and export the Microsoft Office formats. No problems at all in there. But in most cases, I think you'll find that LibreOffice does a better job of import and export of Microsoft formats rather than having Microsoft do the import or the export to a LibreOffice format. There are some exceptions to that, but by and large, I think you'll find that LibreOffice does a better job. And in a way, it's understandable. Microsoft really doesn't want to encourage the use of LibreOffice, whereas LibreOffice, being more the underdog, I guess, in terms of market share, they have to bend over backwards to do a better job than Microsoft will on importing and exporting. So I think that's a win for LibreOffice for sure. There are a few cases, and I'll point out one as we go through the presentation tonight, where Microsoft actually does a better job, but by and large, I think you're better off using LibreOffice. Now, Alan mentioned that he loves the ribbon. It is something that a lot of people don't like, and some people do like. In terms of customization, Microsoft Office has a pretty good job now for allowing you to customize the ribbon. So what you see on the screen here is under the options, and you go to customize ribbon, and then you can choose particular commands, and then on the right-hand side you have all your tabs that come with natively with Microsoft Office products, and then you have groups within those ones. So like I've highlighted in this case, the home tab. And on the home tab, you have groups for clipboard, font, paragraph styles, and editing. So you can go in and you can see what is currently assigned on all of those. And you can choose any of them. And then you can add, create new tabs, new groups in there. Now, there is one deficiency, well, two main deficiencies. One is you can't search for commands. So if you go into the list of the commands that you see over here, and if you choose all commands, this is a really, really long list. And so it can be a real pain to find a particular command if you're looking for, you know, is it color or is it font color? Because it's sorted alphabetically. Now, as it turns out, that it's font color. But if you don't know that, you might choose, you know, start typing in color and you don't find it, you know, if you're just going down the list alphabetically. The other thing is that you can't modify the default groups. So the tabs that are up there and the groups that Microsoft has created, you can't modify those. But you can create new groups on the existing tabs, and you can create new tabs. And within those new tabs, you can create groups as well. So there is a lot of customization capabilities, and I think that's a pretty good win for Microsoft Office. They do a decent job of allowing you to customize things. LibreOffice, on the other hand, doesn't allow you to do very much on customizing the ribbon. So you go to Tools, Customize, Notebook Bar is what they call their ribbon interface, and you can customize it by a particular module. So in this case, I'm doing the tabs in LibreOffice Writer, and you can choose an existing tab, and then you can see that you can toggle on or off existing options, but you can't add tabs, you can't add additional commands onto tabs, you can't create different groups. It's really, really limited in what you can actually do. Now, the tabbed interface is relatively new. I expect that customization of this will probably be coming in more up-to-date versions of LibreOffice, but as it stands right now, its ability to customize its ribbon interface is quite bad. On the other hand, customizing menus, it does a really, really nice job. So you get a category of commands, and then you can customize that, and you can actually have a search box. So when you go to modify color and you don't know whether you're searching for, font color or color of font or whatever, you can just type in, like I did in here, and you can just type in color, and then it'll bring in all of the commands that have color anywhere in the name of it. Really nice to be able to find things very quickly. You can put the scope to either a program itself, or you can actually do it to the document. So you can have a customized document that has menus that are customized for that particular document. You can add new menu options. I think that that is a win for LibreOffice. Some might say, though, that it's a win because Microsoft doesn't even give you menus. So, but they do a nice job of allowing you to customize them for sure. They also allow you to customize toolbars. So you can go to Tools, Customize Toolbars, and again, you have full capability to modify things on your existing toolbars. You can choose any toolbar. You can choose whether you want it to display just an icon and text, or just text. You can toggle on or off existing ones. You can add commands to any toolbar. You can add new toolbars. It's really, really nice, and LibreOffice clearly a win on there. Microsoft doesn't allow you to customize any of their toolbars. If you happen to get into customizations and all of a sudden you think, this is a real mess. I've gone, I think I took away some commands and that I do need now, and I've rearranged things. I really want things to get back to the way they were. In Microsoft Office, you can go to the File tab, Options, Customize Ribbon, and there's a reset button, and that'll reset that particular area. You can delete the default template, which is where all these customizations end up sitting. And you have a nuclear option of deleting registry keys. So if you have things really messed up, if you look it up on the web, how to reset customizations in Microsoft Office, there are some registry keys you can go in and manually delete. LibreOffice, every menu, tab, so forth, has an option to reset customizations. And there is a nuclear option there, too. If you go to Help and Restart in Safe Mode, then it'll come up with you can reset to factory defaults, and you can reset settings, interface modifications. You can reset your entire user profile, apply the changes, and restart, and that'll get rid of all the customizations that you had in there. So I think that's a little bit of a win for LibreOffice. They make it a little bit easier to reset things. This is one thing that drives me a little bit nuts, modal dialog boxes. So a modal dialog box appears on top of the main content that you're working on, and it disables that main content until you finish with that dialog box. Microsoft Office uses modal dialog boxes, and to me, it's a pain in the... And LibreOffice uses non-modal dialog boxes, and it's, to me, it's much more fluid, and LibreOffice is a big win on that. So the way that this works is that, say, I have a title style that I've applied here. So Lorem Ipsum has the title style applied to it. And then I decide that I want to actually customize that style. So I bring up the modify style dialog box and say I want to change some font information. Now, there's very limited font information that can be actually changed here. If I want to delve into it a little bit deeper, I have to click on the format menu and then go into the font dialog box. So now all of a sudden I discover that my title style or my title in my document where I can actually see what it looks like, that's been covered up by this dialog box that's underneath this one. So if I want to see, well, what will actually look like without completing things, I can't see what's underneath that. I can't click on this modify style dialog box and move it until I'm finished with this topmost dialog box. So I can't preview the effect until I actually complete the work on it. On the other hand, LibreOffice has non-modal dialog boxes. So the way this works is, again, I have a title style that has been applied, and I bring up the dialog box to modify styles, and then I say I want to go into paragraph style, and I do the font. And, I'm looking in there and I'm saying, okay, I'm on Liberation Sans, one of the fonts that comes with LibreOffice. And this is covered up by this other dialog box over here. That's no problem. With this dialog open, I can then move this underlying dialog box. I can even move the main program window and I'm not locked into, you know, finishing up with this one dialog box on the top. So for me, that's a much more fluid way of working with things. And to me, that's a really big win for LibreOffice. So now I'd like to get into comparing what I did in Word versus Writer. So first thing off, the basic editing, your cover. So, you know, things like margin control, justification, fonts, styles, graphics. I have a star and an asterisk on that because there's a little bit of difference in graphics, how they handle them. Form controls, block select. I didn't even know that you could do block select until I actually discovered it in LibreOffice. So all your basic editing controls, you know, they're going to be there. So graphics, this is the asterisk that I put in the previous slide. In Microsoft Word, words don't overlap the area of the graphic. Okay, so it'll be, you know, pushed out to the side. You can put it in line. There's various options you have for formatting around the graphics, but overall, you can't have the words overlap unless it just overlaps completely across the graphic. On the other hand, LibreOffice Writer allows you to contour your text around a graphic, which is really kind of nice. So the actual graphic that you see here is actually, you know, square like you see it here. But it'll contour around what is, you know, the visible parts of your graphic, and it'll overlay white parts of the graphic. So I think that is really, really a nice feature, and something I think that LibreOffice did a very good job on, and I think they deserve a plus on that one for sure. Now, coming back to the conversion things, this is one place where I wasn't happy with LibreOffice Writer. So say you have a LibreOffice Writer document and you want to give it to somebody who has Microsoft Word. Okay. First off, Microsoft Word doesn't support this contouring of text around it. So I don't expect that when it gets into Word, it's going to allow you to have contoured graphics around it. And sure enough, if I have a Writer ODF file and I open it up in Word, the text is all just tightly wrapped around the border of the graphic itself. So that I fully expected to happen. What I didn't fully expect to happen was if I export the Word from LibreOffice Writer to Word format, and then I open up the document in Microsoft Word, you look and you can see that the graphic is actually placed over top of the text as opposed to bordering the graphic. So I think that is really problematic. Now, you can easily go in and you can right-click on the graphic and you can change how it is wrapped around that. But think about if you're giving documents to other people or even if it's a document that you're using, are you going to notice that something like that has happened? Maybe not. Maybe you will. Maybe you won't. That's part of the danger of translating between the Office suites.
Chris?
Yep.
Serge Eric is asking, can't you move the window covering the style format to your second screen if you have one?
You can only move the top level one. So if I go back to that one here, let me go back to the Microsoft example. So I could move this to another screen, but I still would have this modify style dialog box would be over top of the text itself. And so I wouldn't be able to see the title because the dialog box is over top of it. Moving this to another screen is not going to allow me to move this underlying one. It's a modal dialog box. You can do nothing in Microsoft Word until you actually finish with that dialog box that's on top. Okay, so this is one area where in the conversion, Microsoft Word does a better job, I think, of importing a particular style of document that has these contoured text around a graphic. It does a better job than LibreOffice does exporting it to Microsoft Word format. So one of the exceptions to the rule. So I think that's a win for Microsoft Word. Column block select, I didn't even know this existed until I saw it on the menus in LibreOffice. But say you have this where somebody's forwarded an email and you end up with those greater than signs and a space at the start of every line and you want to get rid of that. Well, in LibreOffice Writer, you can go on to edit, selection mode, and select block area. In Microsoft Word, you can hold down the Alt key while you're selecting the text. And basically what you do is you just click there and hold down if you're in Microsoft Word, you hold down the Alt key. And in LibreOffice, you just do this edits selection mode block area, drag down to there, and it'll select a block of text, and then you could hit delete, and you'd be able to get rid of those. The thing here is that I'm really wanting to point out is that both can do this, and you'll find this a lot between the two suites, that they can both do a particular function. Sometimes they're just done a little bit differently. And sometimes it's really not obvious how you do it. So Google is your friend, and you can find out how to do a particular function that you know can be done in one suite. You know, how can you do it in the other? And more often than not, you'll find it can be accomplished. Text effects. In Microsoft Word, you have really extensive text effects. So shadowing. You have control over the color of the shadow, how out of focus it looks, the direction it is. All of those sort of things can be applied and modified in shadows. You can do reflections. You can do glow, and you can change the amount of glow, the color of the glow. You can do 3D bevels on text and things like that. LibreOffice Writer, you have shadow. Is the only thing you can do, and it is a single effect. It is a single gray, and it's offset to the bottom right. Reflection glow, 3D bevel. If you bring in a document from Microsoft Word that has those effects in it, the effects will just disappear. So I think that's a win for Microsoft Word. Styles between Microsoft Word and LibreOffice Writer. I think in Microsoft Word, the previewing of the styles is bit mixed. The editing styles, I think, is poor because it becomes very, very tedious. LibreOffice Writer, previewing the styles is poor, but the editing of styles is very good. Anybody who does extensive word processing probably wants to have very good control over styles. So when you're previewing styles with Microsoft Word, if you just have your cursor in a particular piece of text and you hover over a particular style, you'll see it live on the screen, what the effect is before you actually click on that, which is kind of nice. Now you don't see the details of the style. So in this case here, we're on heading one style, and that looks like it has color on it. It looks like it's a different point size. It could be a different typeface. I don't see the details of exactly what that style really is. And you will only see recommended styles. You won't see the full style list that's available to you at any point in time. If you bring up the full style list dialog box, you'll see the details of the style. So you can see here, heading one is actually the font, different different font, Calibri Light, 16-point, a different color. Yes, spacing before and after, or in this case, just 12 points before it, and so forth. So you can see all of the details about what exactly that style is all about. But if you're in that, you don't see the preview of the style over there as you go down through your list of normal. This one, no spacing, heading one, heading two. As you select it, you don't actually see the preview in your document. But I think it does a pretty good job of allowing you to have good control, see what's going on with your particular fonts. In Writer, the previous styles, you get a little bit, not quite as much. So in the menu, and I, throughout all of this, I'm not even using the preview, the toolbar version of the menus and that. I'm using the original menus. So in the menu, you can't preview a style effect. So if I hover over something on here, I don't actually see the effect on the document. And I can't see all the styles either. I just see a subset of all available styles. If I go to the Manage Styles dialog box, which is on there, or hit F11, I'll get Full Styles dialog box. And in there, I get a preview of it. And I still don't see it reflected on the document itself as I hover over particular styles. And I can't see the details of the styles. If I want to see what that heading one really is made up of, I have to go into an edit mode to actually see what effects are being applied to that. So I think that previewing the styles, definitely Word does a better job than Writer does. Now, as you go through your document, as you put your cursor into a particular area of text, you will get a preview of both in the ribbon, in Microsoft's case, of which style is being applied. In this case, it's title style. And you will actually see if you have the Full Styles dialog box, it will actually highlight what is the current cursor position, what style is being applied to that. And likewise, in LibreOffice Writer, the menu will actually show in this blue box what the cursor is. If there's a style applied to it, it'll show you what it is. And if you have the whole styles dialog box, it'll also highlight the cursor is in a position there where the heading one style is applied. So I think they both do a really good job of letting you know as you go through your document what styles have been applied to your document. For Word, editing your styles, you get into this where you see very, very detailed information about what exactly is in that particular style. However, if you want to modify a particular style, and say I wanted to modify something, you know, some aspect of this, I didn't want spacing to be exactly that, or I didn't want to be the font to be 28 point, I want it to be something different, or I want it to be a different color, or something like that. So if I do anything other than what is very basic in this dialog box, I have to click on this format dropdown, and then all of a sudden I get these 9 sub-dialog boxes that I have to hunt through or switch between if I want to affect different aspects of that particular style. So to me, that's a really tedious way of going about editing a particular style. I think that's a loss for Microsoft Word. Writer, on the other hand, is very elegant in this regard. So if I wanted to modify heading one, in this case, this lorem ipsum, I end up with one tabbed dialog box that covers all of the aspects that I can actually change on it. And so say I wanted to change the font. I could come into the font tab and I could choose a new font and I could choose the style and I could choose the size. And then if I hit apply, I actually see the effect of that live on that document without closing the dialog box. So if I want, oh, okay, I want to change it a little bit else, I might go to 140%, click apply, and I'll see the effect right away. I could then flip over to font effects, and I could say, well, I want that style to be dark gold in color. Okay? And maybe I want overlining, you know, overlining on the text. And I wanted a single overline. Click on apply. I'll see it on the dialog box right there, or on the actual document. I want indents and spacing. So I decided I wanted to outdent this. So I can come to the indents and spacing, and I can go in. I can say I want it before text minus 0.7 centimeters. Click on apply. I see it right on the document. So really, really nice way that they handle for editing of styles. And I think for editing of styles, LibreOffice Writer is a clear winner in that regard. So the overall conclusion between these is that to me, the capabilities are very, very similar. Okay, there are minor differences here and there. Whether it's going to affect anything that you actually do in your editing, who knows? You have to do that comparison yourself. LibreOffice has really, really obviously tried to duplicate Microsoft Word, and they've done a pretty credible job of it, and they've gone beyond what Microsoft will give you in some regards. So there are minor differences. In some cases, I think Word is better. In some cases, LibreOffice Writer is better. Quite a few things are done a little or, in some cases, a lot differently, like editing of styles. And to learn how things are done, your best friends, manual for Writer. Microsoft has no manual. They have some help files, but it's not really a manual. You can download, like, I think there are about 350-page manuals in PDF format for each of the modules for LibreOffice. They are really, really well documented, and there's a lot of support out there as well. So Google can help you out, whether you're on the Microsoft side of things or the LibreOffice side of things. Google can definitely help you out on that regard. So my recommendation is a little bit mixed. I think if you're only using one, Word or Writer, the overall capabilities are so similar that I think it's too close to call one as a winner and one as a loser. If you have files that were created in Microsoft Word, you're better off if you edit and use them in Microsoft Word. If you have files created in LibreOffice Writer, you're better off if you edit and use them in LibreOffice Writer. Now, if you have to mix and match, so if you have to work in Microsoft Word and the file was created in LibreOffice Writer, or if you have to work in LibreOffice Writer and the file was created in Microsoft Word, usually import or export with Writer rather than doing import or export with Microsoft Word. And with that, I will turn it back over to Alan to take over for...
And just before you do that, Corinne has a question. Was the table function assessed?
There is a table function. I didn't actually look at it myself at all. So I didn't have time to compare all capabilities, and that's one that I actually didn't look at.
I've used tables in both a little bit, and I don't really see that much difference, I guess. Okay, so let's move on to the spreadsheet function, and now we're looking at Microsoft Excel versus LibreOffice Calc. And if you're not a big spreadsheet user, then you probably know that spreadsheets basically do numerical calculations, and in particular, they're very good for financial applications. And if you think about, Lotus 1-2-3 was the first real spreadsheet for the PC. And it was considered to be the killer app which made the PC into a viable business tool. So it will do lots of stuff with numbers, but it can also handle text and dates. There are lots of different formulae for all kinds of things that you might want to calculate. And you can do some pretty complex data analysis. And Chris has talked in to the club about Excel and pivot tables. And that's a really interesting way of digging down into the depths of data and seeing what it actually means, or looking at it in a range of different ways. It allows you to do complex formatting of your data, and especially stuff like conditional formatting. So depending on the number, you can decide what the format of the information in the cell is going to look like. It's really good for things like tables and graphs and charts. It has a lot of different functionality in terms of making data pretty. And it also has very powerful search and sorting capabilities. And the really neat thing about it, the thing that I like, is there's a macro programming function. So if you have tasks which you repeat all the time, then you can write programs, so-called macros, that will do those tasks and automatically. So it's a real big time saver. Okay, so in terms of the two packages, as Chris mentioned, there's a lot of similarities. And here's a spreadsheet that I use for the board reporting for the club's accounting system. And you'll notice it's got rows and columns and text and numbers. But it has some functionality in terms of all the title headings here are done in boldface. I've got a working column over here, and I've got some subtypes and subtotals, and I'm using highlighting of the cell to indicate the subtotals. And you also see that when I have a negative number, instead of being the black, it shows up as being red, and you have the option of showing it as a negative number, or the other financial construct is to show it in brackets. And then you can do sums with it. So here's an example of taking the previous month's total, adding in all the income items, subtracting all the expense items to get the total in the account at the end of the month. So I'm doing that by using a formula where I'm equaling B14, the contents of this cell, plus these cells minus these cells to give me the value in this cell over here. And by the same token, you can do that column-wise. So here I'm taking all of the membership income to date and calculating a total for the total membership income. And then I can go one step further and I can add up the total income amounts and the total expense amounts. So I've got total income, total expense, and then I can get the difference, the income over expenses, which at this point in time, we were in the red by $139. And you notice down here, I've also got some information on the amount of money that we have in hand, various bank accounts and so on. And so now what I can do is I can compare how much money the various income and expense amounts have left us with to what the total money is in these various cash accounts. And by using this formula down here, I can say if I-19, if this number right here, I-19, is equal to B-34, then in the cell where I have the formula, I want you to type the number, I want you to type the text correct. And if those numbers don't agree, then it's going to say incorrect. And I can show you that because if I put a fictitious expense amount in this column up here, let's say I put $500 in there, then suddenly this number, $17,130, isn't equal to $17,630, and it shows me that the balance is incorrect. But you notice that I've actually gone a bit further than that, and I've highlighted this whole line with red text and a red background to really draw the eye to there's a problem. I mean, this is an accounting system. It's a debit and credit system, and everything should agree. So clearly there's a problem, and the difference here, the $500, I've got to go and look for that and find out where it is. Well, it's not hard to find, but there again, and it's very useful to be able to do that. So what I've done here is I've gone to the, I've highlighted the cells, I've gone to the format menu, conditional, and chosen a condition. And then for the condition, I've chosen, look at the formula. If the contents of G31 is incorrect, then apply a style. And this is a default style. It's called bad. And if the data in the cell is bad, then it gives me a red background or a pinkish background and red text. So that's how I get my conditional formatting. Now the good news is here's the same spreadsheet. It's the same OPCUG.ods. It's the open document spreadsheet format file, which I've opened directly in Excel. And you can see that I've got I've got bold facing, I've got highlighting, I've got negative numbers in red, and I've got my conditional and formatting, all automatically. I haven't had to do anything differently. Now, those are all basic, fairly basic spreadsheet-type functionality, but basically it gives you the same results by using exactly the same file. Now, I mentioned that you can do nice things with text, with graphs and charts and that kind of thing. And here's an example where we're taking the last 5 years data for total expense, income, and the amount of assets. I'm basically putting these numbers onto a 3D chart, which I always tell you is the big picture. So you can see that overall assets are declining a bit, and you can see how the expenses in red go up and down, and the income in green does similar things at the same time. In terms of charting, here's an example of a multi-function chart, effectively. This is actually the amount of money in my cell phone account over any given year. I use a pay-as-you-go phone. So it's looking at the change in value of the total amount I've got left as the months go by. And basically, it's charting these two columns here. I've got the dates and the amount of money, and every now and then I'll have a number. So this point on the chart right here represents this value on the 2nd of February was $29 and change. But you notice also that I've got a second data series over here. So when we get to the end of the month, or the start of the month, if you like, I use a couple of data points and give it the values 0 and 160. So I've got one point down here at 0, another point up here at 60, and that data series is plotted basically as a vertical line. So it's, for my purposes, it's telling me how we're progressing through the year in terms of month ends. So it gives me a nice picture of how the account's changing over time. I mentioned pivot tables and Chris's presentation. And here's an example I gave at one of the Q&A sessions, I think, where I took everybody's, all the members' postcodes, and extracted the first three digits, which is the post office calls that the forward sortation area code. And then I ran those through a pivot table. So it basically sums how many KOAs I have and how many K1Gs I have. And then it will tell me, give me a kind of a bar plot of what they look like. So you can see that most of the members live somewhere down here, and then they're spread out with some outliers here and there. But that really doesn't tell you an awful lot. But it turns out that Excel has a neat function called add-ins. And here you can see I've got a bunch of add-ins. And one of them is called PowerMap for Excel. And using PowerMap, I can take that pivot table data and overlay it on an actual map. So now you can see that big spike in the bar graph is because most of the people live in Bar Haven. And then they're spread out along the, the Ottawa area, some in the outliers, some in Quebec here, some in deepest, darkest Mississippi Mills somewhere. And if you look at a bigger map, you'll find that we also have members in BC and London, Ontario, and places like that. So that's quite an interesting way of being able to view your data in a map-based chart, essentially. Sorting data is pretty simple. Here's a list of names. I want to sort these into alphabetical order. Bugs Bunny's down here. Mickey Mouse is up at the top. So what I do is I highlight my data. And if I just want to do a simple sort, I can just click on sort them into ascending order. And It changes my original table to Bugs Bunny comes to the top, Charlie Brown second, and Yogi Bear now ends up at the bottom. And you notice that the blank space here at the top has disappeared. It's actually moved down because that ends up as a bigger value and ends up down the bottom of the table. And you can do much more sophisticated sorts than that. Another useful feature in these spreadsheet programs is to use the filter. So if you highlight the cells and apply a filter over here, sort and filter, then you get these little drop arrows, which you recognize as being drop-down menus. So now if I click on this drop-down menu for vehicle make, then it will tell me that I've got select all. Well, this is a toggle. So if I uncheck select all, then it will now show me the individual manufacturers are all unchecked. And I can decide, well, I'm only interested in Toyotas. So let's check on Toyotas. And then we'll go to the model filter. And because I selected Toyota, I only see the models which are associated with Toyota. So now I can say, well, I'm only interested in Toyota Prius. So let's filter for Prius as well. And then when we do that, you'll see that now I've got a filter set for make and a filter set for model, and my huge rows of numbers are now down to the two records that I'm interested in. The other thing that I said was useful was macro programming. So here's an example of a VBA macro. So I've got this program, spreadsheet called prizedraw.xlsm. So this is a macro-enabled Excel spreadsheet. And the reason for doing this is it always amazed me that when we used to do things like door prizes and raffles, we handed out all these paper tickets, and then we put them in a hat and shook them up and drew out a raffle ticket and said, oh, my winner is number 7,965. I always thought, you know, we're a computer club. We should be able to do this electronically. So just for a giggle, I decided to write a program that will do that. So now you see that we've got some control buttons here. I've got a reset button. But I've also got this control button called prize draw. And if I click on that control button, then what it's going to do is it's going to go and look at the list of names over here. And you notice my names are my cartoon characters again. And it's going to create a random number and then pick out one of these names as the winner. So I'm going to hit prize draw. And if I did this in real time, it would be instantaneous. Almost however long that list of names is, it would just click the name and nobody would believe that it was actually doing a draw. So what I did was I write out in this cell here, I'm drawing a name. And then I wait for a few seconds. And I say, oh, I'm thinking really hard. And then I say, oh, and now I know the winner is. And now we've got to look at the underlying macro. So here's the Visual Basic code. And you can see that I'm setting a number called low to be 1. And then I go into the names worksheet where all those cartoon characters are. And I find out, which is the last row number? How many names do I have in that list? And I set that to high. High is the last row number. So now I know the beginning one is 1 and the last one is the last row number. And here's where I cheat and I say, okay, write drawing a name to cell B4 and then wait. Just a simple wait command for 3 seconds. So my macro is writing out these text values and then just waiting for 3 seconds. And eventually it carries on and it says, all right, let's pick a random number between high and low, go to the names worksheet, and using this number, pick out a name, get the value of that name. And sure enough, there the winner is. In this case, it chose the winner is Donald Duck. And interestingly enough, if you take that exact same prizedraw.xlsm file, a Visual Basic file, and stick it into LibreOffice. So here we're running LibreOffice Calc. And I run prize draw, it will pick out, and it picks it out at random. This time it chose Bugs Bunny. Now, LibreOffice never used to be able to do that. You couldn't run Visual Basic for Applications macros in Calc. But now the developers have developed some support for VBA. And when I bring in that XLMS file, LibreOffice knows that this is a macro. So automatically it enters a command at the top to say option VBA support is set to 1. In other words, provide support for VBA macros. And then it runs the program correctly, which is one of those moving target type things. It didn't used to do that 10 years ago, but it does do it now. Now, here's another spreadsheet. This is my general ledger spreadsheet. So this is where you get the debits and credits for all the accounting operations. And this is actually a LibreOffice Calc file. So this is an open document spreadsheet. And you can see I've got a bunch of control buttons. And behind each of these control buttons is a LibreOffice basic macro. So when I click on, for example, income transaction, then it switches control to this data entry worksheet, and it picks up the transaction number from somewhere in the database. It knows the actual date, and it, because it's an income transaction, I'm going to credit some account, because the debit account is going to be the cash account, which is 1,000. So it fills in some of the blanks, which are kind of known. I can change the date if I don't want the 22nd of March. I'm not allowed to change the transaction number because that's the only one I haven't used yet. And then I can enter in these blue squares the amount of money, the credit account I want to use, maybe the membership income or something like that. And then the amount, and then some kind of description. And then when I hit save, it will actually save that information into the, actually goes into the general ledger spreadsheet. All right, so that's basically because all my control buttons are running macros in the background. Here's that same file brought into Microsoft Excel. Here's OPCU.ods, the ODS spreadsheet in Microsoft Excel. And you can see there's a problem. I don't have any control buttons. I've got all kinds of spreadsheet worksheets over here, but I've got no control buttons to run my macros. So that's not terribly useful. But it is telling me up here some information, calculation settings, formulas using, all right, more details. So it basically says, when you're using two file formats like XLSX, Excel format, or Open Document Spreadsheet, there can be formatting differences and not all features will be available. And one of the features that isn't available is LibreOffice Basic Macros. So if I go into the Development tab in Excel and pull up Macros, this should be full of macro programming code, different modules, and basically it hasn't copied any of the modules over. So there's a huge difference between Excel and Calc. Calc supports VBA to some extent, but Excel doesn't support LibreOffice Basic. So when you look at the two, modules, if you're doing simple stuff in spreadsheets, it probably doesn't matter which one you use. They both have very similar functionality, and they work pretty well the same way. And the menus may be a little bit different, as Chris mentioned, but typically it's easy to figure out what you want to do. As I said, the real big difference is if you want to do macro programming. The two, Visual Basic for Applications and LibreOffice Basic, are quite different. And while the developers of LibreOffice are providing support for VBA, And there's no reciprocity from Microsoft. So if you wanted to run VBA, then don't run Calc because if you want to run LibreOffice Basic, you have to run Calc. You can't run Microsoft Excel. Now, that's not unreasonable. Really, there's no percentage in Microsoft supporting LibreOffice Basic. They have the lion's share of the Office market, the lion's share of the spreadsheet market. Most people, therefore, use VBA, and there's really no percentage in Microsoft trying to run LibreOffice Basic. But just be aware that if you want to switch, then it's not necessary that you'll be able to do exactly what you want. Okay.
We had just one question from Bill. If you run your program for drawing tickets three times, do you get different winners each time or always the same?
Well, it's a random number, so...
Let's hope it's not the same.
The chances are you're going to get three different winners, but it's also possible you could get two of the same because it's random.
Yeah.
But by the same token, we only ever picked out one door prize, so, or one raffle prize or something, so it doesn't really matter. And we never really used it for that anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so PowerPoint versus Impress is back to Chris.
Okay, so this time I'll hit Shift F5. So we'll get on to the right slide. So I'm going to take a look at PowerPoint versus Impress. And this was actually something that interested me a lot because I do a lot of presentation stuff, used to do even more. And so I use PowerPoint. And so I was really curious whether Impress could impress me. So when it comes to shapes you can put on a slide, you're covered on either of the suites. So PowerPoint, you get it all in one screen and you just have many dozens of different shapes you can select from. You hover over top of one of them, it'll give you a tooltip which tells you what the shape is if you can't figure it out from looking at it. LibreOffice is a little bit different in Impress. And what they've done is they have these submenus that will come out that will give you basically what you see here. So lines, if you go to the line menu, it'll come out with all of the same basic shapes in that. In your rectangles, you know, you'll have that under your basic shapes and so forth. So it's a little bit more convoluted in that you have to go down a level to get them. Another thing you get is you get the text as well as the shape that you actually see them. So to me overall, I think it's a small advantage to PowerPoint to actually get it into one screen as opposed to having all of these flyout menus. But they both cover you off. And as we saw with Word and Writer, it looks like LibreOffice has done a big job of trying to duplicate exactly what you get on the Microsoft side. And they've done that with the shapes. Arranging objects is another big task when it comes to presentation software, and you're covered on both sides on that. So both of them allow very extensive snapping objects to grids or objects for free floating, flipping horizontally or vertically, aligning objects one to another, grouping objects together, ungrouping them, doing layers where you layer objects one on top of another, move things up or down the stack. Both of them do a very, very good job of that. Impress has a few more capabilities when you're snapping and distributing objects. So really sort of minor differences that I didn't find them to be significant. But if you do an awful lot of aligning of objects, you may find that Impress does a little bit better job or a little bit more complete job on that. So I'd say a small advantage, and quite a small advantage when it comes to LibreOffice on that side of things. When you're modifying objects, I think the PowerPoint has a significant object when you're modifying objects. And that's because you can see the effect live on the slide. So here's an example where I've highlighted the word zoom and I want to change the text size from 40 to something else. Okay. So what I do is I highlight that and then I click on the down pointing triangle in the font size dialog box. I click on that And then if I just hover over top of the 60, it will show me the word zoom at 60 point. And I can just go up or down, and I'm not clicking on it and selecting it. I'm just hovering over top, and I'll see the effect on the slide before I actually choose. So it works when you're doing any sort of attribute. So if it's a typeface, you'll see the exact typeface that you're hovering over top of, or a color or a weight, transparency, fill, outlines, anything like that at all. You'll see the effect live on the slide before you actually choose it. So PowerPoint does a very, very good job, I think, of being able to preview effects before they take effect. On the other side of things in Impress, it doesn't actually show you the effect until you commit to it. So for example, here I've selected the word zoom, and I click on the down pointing triangle, and if I hover over top of 80 point, I haven't clicked on it, I'm just hovering over top of it, I don't actually see the change on the screen until I actually select it. So when I click on 80 point, that menu goes away, and then I will see the word zoom at 80 point. If I decide, oh, that's a little bit too big, I'd have to go back to the size dialog box, go down, select 78 point. Oh, is that okay? Oh, no, I have to go back. So it's back and forth. You don't get that live preview before you commit to something. So, and it's the exact same thing modifying other attributes to objects, you know, outlines, colors, backgrounds, everything like that, transparency and so forth. So I think that that's actually a fairly significant difference in Impress, where they don't come up to as good a job as Microsoft PowerPoint does. AutoText, they both do a very, very good job on that. It's a very nice feature in both placeholders for your slide masters as well as text boxes. So you can have a particular size of text box, and you can have it automatically resize things so that they fit that text box. So it'll shrink down text as it needs to in order to have all of the text fit within that particular box. So it allows you to avoid having content run off the bottom of the page. It just shrinks things down so that they fit. So I think it's really, really nice. Now, PowerPoint does have a couple of extra options. So when you select it, you'll get this little icon over here that shows you that it's doing an auto fit. And so what you can do is you can choose to stop auto fitting, and it'll just flow down beyond the text box. But you actually have some extra additions in here. So stop fitting text to this placeholder, and what do you want to do with it? You can actually split the text onto two slides, or continue with a new slide, or change to two columns. So I think that those are nice additions. Quite frankly, I don't usually use those, but they are additions that Impress doesn't have. So I think it's a win for PowerPoint in that regard. For layouts, you're covered on both sides. So both PowerPoint and Impress have lots of layouts. It's easy to customize the slide masters to suit your needs. But I think that PowerPoint is a little bit more straightforward in how they go about doing the modifications on that. So I think that by and large, it's a little bit of a win for PowerPoint on that side, but essentially they're both very, very capable in that regard. Animations, both sides have you covered quite well on that. Animations control how objects appear or leave. So it'll be a bullet point or maybe a graphic that you have it appear on the slide and then leave the slide. So you have order, effect, you have fades, wipes, floating, spinning, all kinds of things. The timing of when it comes in, you know, you can have all kinds of effects like that one that you just saw. Both of them have over 40 animations for appearing and leaving the slide. Most of them seem identical. There are a couple that I found that acted a little bit differently. So this again comes into a translation thing that maybe you like a particular effect or you whatever, and you put it into the opposite suite and it doesn't act exactly the same. Motion paths control how objects move on the slide. And both of them have great control. You can have it, you can draw a curved path or whatever and have the object move on the slide along that path. You can control its timing, all kinds of controls on that. The next thing you get into is transitions. And transitions morph from one slide to the next slide in your deck. Impress has 36 transitions, PowerPoint has 49, so it has more. More so than having more, there are lots of differences in the way that they actually work. And I find that, like that last one, PowerPoint is generally more impressive than the transitions that occur in Impress. And when you back up on a slide, so if I go backwards, my actual transition runs in reverse, which is kind of neat. With Impress, it'll just ignore that transition if you go backwards. So it'll just be a straight cut to the previous slide. And for me, half the Impress transitions didn't work. Now, it may be just my computer. I don't know. I tried Googling about it, and it didn't seem like there were a lot of people having this sort of problem. So it must be something just about my computer. But transitions, a lot of them didn't work on my computer. Now, my personal opinion, when it comes to slide transitions, do you want your audience to remember your slide transitions as being really impressive, or do you want them to pay attention to the content of your slides? To me, I like simple transitions are best, and especially if you're presenting over Zoom, you may find that a lot of the transitions and that don't come across very well when you're going across a Zoom link. And that, I promise, is my last transition. So when you're looking at slides, one of the things that I think is really important is to know what your current layout is. It's easy to design a deck where you have a couple of layouts that are fairly similar, but maybe there's some differences on them, and you accidentally use one versus another. And with PowerPoint, if I go in and I look at this, I can see that this particular slide has computer basics is the layout that was actually chosen for that because it's highlighted in that gray background. So I can always see very easily what my current layout actually is. I think that's a good thing for PowerPoint, that they allow you to see that. On the other hand, Impress, it doesn't actually show you what the current layout is. So if I have this same slide and I go to the layout menu, I can't see that in actual fact what I have is, I think is title and content. But I can't see what the current layout actually is. So if I'm looking for consistency through my deck, it might be more difficult in Impress to ensure that all my layouts are consistently done. So I think that's a minus for Impress. PowerPoint has a color picker. So say I have this slide and I have this boat and I have boarding time 6 p.m. and I want the text to have the same color as the boat. No problem. I can just select that text box and then I go to the font color, click on the eyedropper, and then click somewhere in that orange, and it'll automatically apply that particular color to the object that I'm modifying, in this case, a piece of text. So I think that's really, really nice to be able to have that where you can pick out a color and just apply it without having to try and figure out what the color actually is. On the other hand, Impress has no color picker. So you could still have the full range of colors that are available. It's just that you would have to know, in this case, what is that color orange, and then apply it by putting in an RGB value or hue, saturation, brightness, cyan, magenta, yellow key, whatever. So you have to know the color value of that other object before you can apply it to have it match. So I think that's a little bit of a minus on Impress's part. Compatibility issues, I ran into a few. So I have here in PowerPoint, I have a text box with three columns of text. I have a three-color gradient fill. And PowerPoint will actually allow you to have many colors in a gradient. I don't know if there's a limit. By default, if you do a gradient color gradient box, it'll have two colors. But you can add additional ones and move the sliders so more or less of the slide is a particular color. Very, very flexible on that. If I export from PowerPoint to the LibreOffice format and then I open it up in Impress, I lose the columns. I have no 3D effect on the box. You can see around the edge of this box, there's a 3D effect on it. So I lose that. And Impress can only handle two colors of a gradient fill. So if you have only two, you're okay. But if you use any more than that, you will end up with just two. And I presume it just takes it from one end and goes as far as it can, and then it just loses any gradients beyond that. Interestingly, if I save from PowerPoint as a PPTX file and open it up in Impress, I ended up with the same thing, except columns were actually retained. Okay, so this is a case where Impress is actually doing a better job of import-export than PowerPoint is doing. It still can only handle the two colors in the gradient fill, but at least I didn't lose my columns. Compatibility issues on the masters I found to be a real mess. And I played around with this for probably an hour, trying to figure out which was doing which better or worse or whatever. But essentially it came down to it's just a mess on both sides. So a title slide, you can see here that the font that was used is changed. In Impress, I had centered text. I had a bulleted pointed text. In PowerPoint, if I went on title only, you can see the difference in the point size for it. My title and content layout, I had the difference in that. Minor difference as well, it looks like, on the body part of it. So overall, I find it to be a real mess going back and forth between the two products on that. Font sizes, different all over the place. Different bullets appearing or disappearing. And another thing is Impress had icons for different content types. And then when I brought it into PowerPoint, I lost that. And so it was a real mess. It got worse. So here's where I had a deck that I created in Impress. I saved it as PowerPoint PPTX file. And then I brought it up in PowerPoint. I chose a new slide, and I chose content, the layout to be title and content. And it looked fine on the slide, but if I look over here at the thumbnail, it was all messed up. It took everything that was in the basic content of the slide, and it looks like it shoved it into the same area as the title. That was kind of odd. And then I duplicated slide one. Slide two was then all messed up, as you see it in the slide, the thumbnail for slide one. Slide one still appeared normally, except in the thumbnail. So it was a real mess. So this idea of translating back and forth for layouts can be a real problem between the two suites. My overall conclusion on this is that capabilities are very similar. Again, LibreOffice has tried to duplicate Microsoft PowerPoint, and they did a pretty credible job of it. There are minor cases where one will be better than the other. Quite a few things you do differently. Okay, it could be a little differently or a lot differently. And again, your best friends are the manual for Impress or Google to find out how to do something that you know can be done in the other suite. Recommendation on this is mixed. If you're only using one, PowerPoint or Impress, I think it's too close to call. Both of them are very, very capable. I think the PowerPoint is just slightly easier to use than Impress is. And again, if you have a file created in PowerPoint, you're best to use or edit that file in PowerPoint. And if you have a file created in Impress, you're better to use Impress to do any editing or to just use it. If you have to mix and match, okay, if you have to work in PowerPoint on an Impress file, you're better off to do the export import using Impress. And likewise, if you have to work in Impress on a file that was created in PowerPoint, then you're better off to use Impress to do import export. You can probably edit existing slides without messing things up, but whichever way you're going, don't create new slides. Don't duplicate existing slides, because the layouts are a mess when they're translated. And that hopefully will be fixed, you know, before long in Impress. But right now, it is a major issue. Okay. And with that, are there any questions, Alan? Or
No, nothing.
Okay. I will kick it back to you then to do the wrap-up.
Oh. I thought you were in the wrap-up. Okay, let's see what I'm doing here.
You're on slide 111.
Yeah, I've lost the Zoom control panel right now. That's the problem.
Okay.
Here we are.
Just while you're doing that, I see Corrine has a question about speaker notes and can custom slide masters required by organizations be included with both. If you have a slide master that is, or a template that is in probably in PowerPoint, you're going to have a problem using that in Impress because the masters, there is a problem going back and forth with those. So in that case, I would highly recommend that you use PowerPoint to do it. You could basically surgically go in and fix the layouts in Impress, but it'd be a manual process and you'd have to be very careful to make sure you duplicate things correctly.
Sorry, Chris, I'm still struggling here to.
You want me to share?
Yeah, maybe you should. I don't think I'll
okay.
Get this thing working.
Okay. You just let me know when you want to go forward or backwards.
Okay, let's go forwards now.
Okay, well, you want, like, what are the issues?
Sure, go on.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't see my, I can't see what you're displaying right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm on the slide that says wrap up. You don't see that?
Well, I've got PowerPoint full screen or something. I can't find the Zoom window.
Hit escape to get out of PowerPoint then. If you click on your slide that's being displayed and then hit escape, that'll get you out of presenter view.
Can you do the wrap up?
You want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Feel free to jump in if you get it sorted. So, we looked overall at what are the issues. Can you actually save money? And is open source better than closed source? Which suite is better supported and which is more capable? And if you switch, are you going to have problems in that switch? And then compatibility issues. And then finally, should you actually switch? So can you save money? Well, this is a pretty easy one. Microsoft Office 365 is subscription-based, $70 to $100 a year. The family plan actually gives you a fair amount. So for $100 a year, you get quite a lot, but it is costing you money. The perpetual license runs $150 to $250 or above if you go for additional modules that you want included in your copy of the suite. Microsoft Lifecycle has been a moving target. They started out that they said that they would support all products for 10 years. And they have 5 years for mainstream support and then 5 years of extended support. And on the extended support, they would only give you bug fixes or actually security fixes is all they would give you on that. When Office 2019 came out, they actually changed things. So they had 5 years of mainstream support, but then their extended support only goes for an additional 2 years. And this is very quietly sort of slipped in. So Microsoft is going to cost you money. LibreOffice is free. So that's a win for LibreOffice for sure. Open source versus closed source. It's kind of hard to argue against open source. I mean, they're giving you something. You don't have to take advantage of it. But are there benefits for it? Well, probably most people really don't care if something is open source or not. They're not going to be going into the open source code and changing it or anything like that. But I think it is a philosophical issue that some people think that open source is better. There's more transparency. There are maybe other people that are going to fix problems and things like that. So I think that's a win for LibreOffice as well. Which suite is better supported? Well, they both have excellent support from both the developers themselves and the vendors and the community. So you'll find that there's tons and tons and tons of support for both of them out there. I don't think you'll have any problem finding support. which is most capable? Well, as I pointed out, I mean, I think they're both very capable. I think that LibreOffice has done an awful lot to duplicate functionality of Microsoft Office and then gone beyond that in a few regards. So I think that they're both extremely capable suites. If you switch, will you have problems? Well, yeah, it depends. Like all things in computer speak, that depends. So I think that for most people, usage is probably simple enough that any differences have been sorted out years ago, and you'll find that you're not likely to run into problems, and it's more annoyances that you're going to run into rather than something that makes or breaks your day. Compatibility, as Alan pointed out, compatibility has done leaps and bounds in recent years, and you still are going to have issues with opening up documents that were created in the other suite, but by and large, LibreOffice will do a better job importing and exporting the Microsoft formats than Microsoft imports LibreOffice formats. The biggest problem, I think, is going to be not knowing when the fidelity has not been maintained. So, for example, my text boxes in PowerPoint that had three columns, bring that into Impress, and all of a sudden the columns get lost. There can be things like that, or my graphic that overlays the text in when you bring it into Microsoft Word. Are you going to notice that? It might be really, really important that you know when the fidelity has not been maintained between the two Office suites. If you're concerned about fidelity, work with Microsoft documents in Microsoft Office. Work with LibreOffice documents in LibreOffice. Now, the really nice thing is LibreOffice is free. So if you want, you can have, even if you're a Microsoft Office user, you can install LibreOffice on your computer. And if somebody sends you a LibreOffice document, you can open it up in LibreOffice and have 100% fidelity to what that person created. And that's this slide here I have. So overall, it's a Microsoft Office format world. For better or worse, so you're more likely to receive Microsoft Office files from others than you are to receive LibreOffice format files. So that, whether you like it or not, I think is a win for Microsoft Office. So should you actually switch? So if you're a Microsoft Office user, should you switch to LibreOffice? If you're looking to save money, you're definitely going to save money. So if you're looking to reduce any issues you're going to have with fidelity, maybe not, because there are differences that are going to crop up from time to time, and you're going to have to deal with them. Should LibreOffice users switch to Microsoft Office? If you're looking to reduce issues with fidelity, perhaps because you're more likely to come across Microsoft Office format files than you are LibreOffice files. But if you're looking to save money, maybe you don't want to go to Microsoft Office. And that's our conclusion, and we're just over the 9. I'm going to stop the share, and I'm going to mute all, and I'm going to give everybody the ability to unmute themselves. So if anybody has any comments or questions, I see a couple of comments in there in the chat. Can LibreOffice use or import Office fonts? Yeah, fonts are at the operating system level. And so fonts are not going to be an issue at all. If you install LibreOffice, you will get a whole bunch of extra fonts that come in, and they will be used in the default templates that are in LibreOffice, but you can freely use them anywhere. Lorraine says, I'm using ODT from Apache. Can I still use it when I install Windows 11? I would presume that there will be no issue going to Windows 11, but I have yet to actually do any installs on that. I haven't heard of any issues on Windows 11.
Is anybody using OpenOffice in Windows 11? I mean, I would imagine it will, but I don't know.
Yeah, I imagine there'll be no issue on that regard at all. Jocelyn says, an alternative Office suite free for non-commercial that needs less resources, faster on older computers is FreeOffice. So he gave the URL for that. If you want to try it out, there are a number of other Office suites as well. Serge Arik says, don't forget you get 1 terabyte cloud storage with Microsoft 365. And yeah, that's a big benefit. And if you have the family pack, which I think will allow 5 installs, each of those 5 users gets 1 terabyte of cloud storage. So, I mean, there are some benefits that come with being on the Microsoft 365 side of things for sure. Lawrence says Microsoft is like the Borg. Resistance is futile. And unfortunately, unlike the Star Trek canon, the Borg has won the battle. I'm not convinced that they've won the battle. There will always be a place for things like LibreOffice. And I think it's quite a credible suite. And I'm not going to uninstall it from my computer now that I've actually done the work on this presentation.
And when you can't run Windows 11 and you have to switch to Linux, you're going to be using LibreOffice anyway.
Exactly, yeah. And that's all the questions I see in there. So if anybody has any other questions, you can add them to the chat, or if you wanted to unmute yourself, feel free to do so. Okay, we're just getting some kudos coming through. Thank you very much, folks. And Alan, have you sorted out your sharing?
I've got my Windows back, I think so.
Okay, you want to share to take through the wrap-up slides?
I'm just looking for them.
And we'll keep accepting questions as we go forward as well, but Alan has a couple of more slides he will. Or I can share them if you want, Alan.
I think I've got them. Except for not all.
Well, let me share.
I haven't seen those full screen. I keep forgetting that I have to change things to make it go.
Okay, well, that's fine. I've got them. There's just 2 slides. So, just a reminder that the May meeting is me and my Mac, and Gillian Villeneuve from the Macintosh User Group of Ottawa is going to be presenting on what she likes about her Mac. So I think that'll be a very interesting presentation. May 11th, 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. And coming up at Tech Talk for May, we're having the Tech Talk sessions on the first Monday of each of the months for the next 3 months or next 4 months now going forward. And so Linda is going to be presenting on basic photo editing. And so if you have any interest in editing your photography, she will be using free software that you can download from the internet and show you how you can, with not a lot of effort, actually improve your photos. And a reminder that our next Q&A is next Wednesday night, April 20th. And please send in your questions, answers, topics that you wish to share. And that's it.
Okay, so thanks, everyone. I hope we've convinced you to switch to one product or the other. And we'll see you next Wednesday.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you, John.
I suddenly realized I didn't share my screen while I was actually talking through those last slides.
I managed to figure out how to share mine, so it's okay.
Okay.
You can stop recording now.
Yeah, thanks.